Hi everyone, and thanks for tuning in to the UBS Global Research Pod Hub, a channel that shares insights from economists, strategists, and equity analysts on the pivotal questions and events shaping today's markets. My name is Paul Schneider, Head of Markets Focus at UBS Research, and I'm here with my colleagues Tommaso Accolente and Jamie Doricott from our Empirical Scientific Approaches team. In this episode of the Analyst Playbook, we're digging into how data parameters and machine learning are changing what good analysis really looks like. Jamie and Tommaso sit at the intersection of our research department in a core proprietary team responsible for advanced analytics. When people think about equity research, they often imagine spreadsheets and models. But the reality today is that analysis is increasingly focused on how we frame data, interpret it, and how new tools like machine learning and large language models are shaping the analyst workflow. Jamie and Tommaso, welcome to the podcast. Before we get into the detail, perhaps you can both briefly describe your roles and what the team does in relation to data and advanced analytics.
Thank you very much, Paul. It's great to be here to talk to you. So the mission of our team, the Empirical Scientific Approaches team, is to bring the scientific method to equity research. The idea is to have a stock coverage that extracts information from data systematically so that we can build an information advantage over our competitors. We do this mostly in two ways, by teaming up with equity teams to take questions to data. That's my wheelhouse. I normally meet with teams and we ask questions and we answer them using data. And the other vertical of the team is the one that Jamie instead is responsible for, and it's providing tools to do that.
I lead the tooling function in Empirical Scientific Approaches, which essentially means building the tools and infrastructure to let analysts turn questions into data-backed answers. The focus is on modularity, reproducibility, and working in an agile fashion, essentially so that we're not reinventing the wheel every time.
Now, as I mentioned in my introduction, when we think about equity research, and indeed when our listeners think about equity research and the role of an analyst, they'll picture analysts studying advanced models and thinking about charts and how to describe the information that they want to present. But in reality, today, a lot of that is about the interpreting of data, not just the simple analyzing of it. And as we move into this era of a machine-assisted analysis, how much of the job today has shifted?
You're exactly right, Paul. So, like, of course, there are charts and there are models there, but a huge part of what we do today, I would say the predominant part of what we do today, is around data interpretation. This used not to be the case. I'm old enough to remember when data analysis actually would take the lion's share of our time when we would analyze data. Now, when it comes to data interpretation, one reason why this has become increasingly important, and in my view will be even more important in the future, is that somehow estimating models has become cheap. However, we still have to carefully think and choose the data, the model that we estimate, and obviously how we interpret the results. All these activities are interrelated. Of course, analysis formalizes the thinking in code and statistics, but the first thing you really have to think about is how to measure things, or what to measure. Ideally, what you would measure, like just thinking of it in theoretical terms, what would be the good thing to measure given the question at hand? And importantly, what variation matters, right? What is the thing in the data that is varying that makes you say, oh, this is my hypothesis and I have confirmed it, or actually the evidence is against my hypothesis? This is what gives you some confidence, or maybe not, into your assumptions and how defensible they are. We all have to remember that at the end of the day, every statistical model is a mathematical representation of a story, a mathematical representation of a narrative. So yes, interpretation, thinking of alternative words, scenarios, counterfactuals, and asking questions like, you know, how are my results going to change if one of the channels that I think I have modeled in my thinking were to change? One thing that is probably worth mentioning at this point is that we always start from looking at the data as they are, or summarizing the data. One thing that I have learned is that you should never estimate anything before you have first looked or summarized your data. So, Paul, interpretation is very important.
Yeah, I'll keep it brief. I'll just add to that that the scarce skill isn't running models anymore. It's asking the right questions and interpreting results responsibly and in the right way in this, you know, era of machine-generated analysis.
Thanks, Jamie. And as we think about UBS and the way we present research, as you mentioned in your introduction, Tommaso, we see data as a systematic information advantage that we want to position our analysts to focus on in order that we, you know, in order that data is a strategic choice. In that sense, data is a strategic choice in our research department. Now, perhaps before we go into machine learning, let's go back to the foundations. From your perspective, Tommaso, what are the most important decisions that an analyst will make about the data itself? In other words, what do you include? What do you exclude? How do you frame it? And how do those decisions ultimately shape the insights we deliver to clients?
I would say analysts are central to the whole process. They basically pick the ingredients for the model, and it couldn't be otherwise. They are the sector experts. They know much more than I do about the sector, and they have a very good idea of what might be first order or second order, depending on the state of the world. My job instead is more to try and find the appropriate mathematical representation of their assumptions and maybe try to make their thinking more explicit and quantifiable. We use each other, when I say we, like the ESA team and the analysts, we use each other as thought partners at each stage of the discovery of what we are trying to discover. Sometimes we realize that we have more than we need in terms of data. Sometimes we don't exactly have what we need, but we have good proxies. Sometimes we have to go back and collect a little bit more data. This is where colleagues from other parts of the platform normally help a lot. Colleagues from UBS Evidence Lab and UBS Holt, for example. At the heart of whatever we do, though, Paul, there is an understanding that underneath everything we observe, there is a thing that we can call data generating process that generates the thing that you are observing. And that, you know, this thing is driven by companies deciding on costs or by households deciding on consumption and savings.
Tommaso, I totally agree. And of course, when we think about the data that's presented in all of our analyst models and all of our spreadsheets, they underlie, of course, consumer behavior, government decision-making, corporate decision-making, and ultimately people's livelihoods at the outset. To build on that, Jamie, perhaps you can walk us through how these models actually process the information.
Sure, let's get into the nuts and bolts of it. So at a high level, what these models do is actually quite simple. They don't understand data or language quite in a human sense. They operate on something called tokens. So these are small chunks of text. And when it comes to prediction, they are predicting the next token based on everything that's come before. Now that's called an autoregressive process, predicting the next step over and over. And that's what lets them generate code, analytical reasoning, or explanations.
You mentioned analytical reasoning there, Jamie. I guess my subsequent question to that will be, how much control does an analyst actually have over the outputs once a machine learning model gets involved?
So in that sense, analysts have a lot of control in terms of giving the model well-defined objectives, clear prompts, and this, especially in our context, acts a bit like a research design. So rather than removing analyst judgment, these tools actually make it more important. And clarity of instructions is now what matters.
Jamie, in that sense, clearly the prompt must matter.
Absolutely, the prompt really matters. These models have been, and as I've just discussed, they operate on individual tokens, but they have been fine-tuned after being trained on the internet to respond extremely well to instructions, so-called instruction fine-tuned models. So therefore, the prompting, the instructions, the context you give them now becomes extremely, extremely important. And that ultimately is where the differentiation is going to lie when it comes to taking advantage and making the most of these models.
Tommaso, focusing on the day-to-day reality, where tools like LLMs are genuinely adding value to an analyst's workflow today, and just importantly, where are they not a substitute, do we think, for human judgment?
They are useful in more than one way, I believe, and I'm sure Jamie will probably touch on some of those as well later. In my own experience, LLMs have been valuable in improving both the efficiency and the quality of the interactions between our team and sector analysts. I mean, essentially, LLMs changed the starting point of the conversations. Before a discussion even takes place now, both sides will find it very easy to explore relevant concepts or compile literature reviews or find company-specific information that it would have been more difficult to find before. Don't get me wrong, Paul. Of course, people used to come prepared to meetings even before LLMs were around. However, like the cost of getting to the same level of preparation for a meeting has now gone down massively. Having said that, human judgment remains central. For me, the most important part, at least from what I observe working with teams, is deciding how to divide labor between humans and LLMs. That's the key part, right? The key issue is not whether the model can produce an answer. The model will produce an answer. But the point is whether this is the answer to your question, whether the reasoning behind the answer is the correct one, given what you are trying to explain or forecast more generally. You know, this raises important questions, right? Up to what point do you trust an LLM? Where is the human indispensable? How do you use it? Do you use it as a productivity multiplier? As in, do you use the LLM more for things that you already know? And so you can scale that thing because this is a skill that you already have, which will be amplified by the LLM. Or do you use it to close knowledge gaps? I think the latter is a little bit more risky, or I find it personally a little bit more risky, because like when I am like I guess everyone, like when we are in a domain that we master, that that we know well, we are better positioned to validate and assess the answer and the interaction with LLMs. When we venture outside of our own territories, it becomes more difficult. And this is probably when you go to another human, another expert, like, you know, in your institution, and ask, hey, I had a discussion with my LLM. It said that, but I don't think I'm in a position to judge whether it's correct or not, whether it's exactly what I'm trying to say here. So in practice, it's about finding the right balance between what you give to the LLM and what you keep for yourself as a human or as an analyst, as a data scientist. But like, this is not fixed in time in my way. It's gonna depend a lot on the maturity of your own understanding of a topic that you are trying to understand better.
As you were speaking there, I was thinking a lot about the UBS research approach to AI and how we think as a department about it, the tools that we're investing in for our analysts, but the importance of human judgment. And it got me thinking a little bit about high and low consensus. And I guess, Jamie, a question for you, does greater access to these sophisticated tools potentially risk everyone converging on the same conclusion? And if so, how do we maintain differentiation?
Yeah, great question. So clearly, differentiation has always been important, but I think the risk of everyone reaching the same conclusions is higher than ever before. And that's because of the pace at which analysis moves now with access to these sophisticated language models. So where we have high consensus at the mechanical level, meaning we have these machines that can quickly take data, produce a model through software, we're not going to have consensus at the interpretive level. So the data that you use and how you interpret statistics and models is going to ultimately provide the strongest form of differentiation.
And I guess my last question is a little broader. And if I were looking, or we were looking, to embark on careers in finance today, given the knowledge that you have and the roles that you both have, how do you think that someone entering into the industry today would think about learning? What would they be doing first? And where would they be focusing their attention?
Yeah, great question, Paul. So I think the role of an analyst in a department like UBS is changing, and it's changing fast. So a strong fundamental base in finance, economics, business, or science is still going to be really important. But on top of that, I think people coming into the industry now are expected to be able to use these sophisticated tools, AI tools, and that's really going to benefit their career. So the fundamentals haven't changed, but I think making the effort to be able to take advantage of these tools is really going to advance you in the beginning stages of your career.
I couldn't agree more. I would just add one thing. I think like the best thing one can invest on at the moment when approaching university, for example, is to try and get trained to think. That's never going to go away. In a sense, the foundations have to be strong. Like the world in 20 years will not be the world we are now in. The world will have changed again. But if you have strong foundations, and you know, it doesn't matter much the background, if I'm honest. Thinking can be good thinking or bad thinking everywhere, independently of the background you have. But that's the key thing to me. Be open to change your professional profile maybe three times between now and when you retire. I certainly changed mine already once. And I think that's the secret sauce in a way.
Jamie, Tommaso, thank you both for joining me. That's been a fascinating look at how data, judgment and machine learning are intersecting in equity research and how we at UBS are investing in tools and data to best position and give ideas to our clients. If there's one takeaway for me, it's that while tools are evolving fast, the edge still comes from asking the right questions and interpreting data thoughtfully. Thank you for visiting the UBS Global Research Pod Hub. That's an overview of data parameters and machine learning in equity research as part of our Analyst Playbook series within the podcast. With myself, Paul Schneider, Head of Markets Focus, and my colleagues Tommaso Aquilente and Jamie Doricott. If you've enjoyed this episode, please tune in again and share this episode with a friend or colleague. We look forward to presenting more ideas very soon.
This content has been prepared by UBS AG, its subsidiaries and/or affiliates, and is purely informational in nature. It is not investment research and does not contain an investment recommendation, nor investment or professional advice. It is not an offer or solicitation to engage in any investment activity, and you should seek your own financial, tax, and legal advice before engaging in any such activity. UBS has no responsibility to you in relation to this content and has no regard to your personal circumstances or investment objectives, and receiving it does not imply any form of client relationship with UBS for any legal, regulatory, or tax purpose. This content is not intended for distribution into any jurisdiction, where to do so would be contrary to law or regulation. UBS does not accept any liability over the content of such material or reliance upon any information contained herein. The views and opinions expressed by any guest speaker or third party are not those of UBS. Accordingly, UBS does not accept liability over any such views and opinions expressed by such persons. This content is the valuable intellectual property of UBS, and UBS specifically prohibits the redistribution of it in whole or in part without its prior written permission. Copyright UBS 2026. The key symbol and UBS are among the registered and unregistered trademarks of UBS. All rights reserved.